This is CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, boys.
Morning, George.
Hello,
George.
Good, good, good. It's the three of us in the studio this morning, yeah.
I feel so alone.
Alone. Well, I've got a bit of a cold, as you can probably hear.
I know, there's a nice sexy husky voice coming from that side.
That's why you're sitting on that side of the desk. And we're
I don't know if Martin telling me that I have a sexy husky voice is a good idea.
Make of it what you will.
Yeah, make of it what you will. So I might just copper and splutter, but... you know, that's one of those things, I suppose. I'm going to try and kick it today. So, how are you, Martin?
I'm always excellent.
What did you do the weekend?
Worked and then nothing.
Worked
took
and then
a nice little road trip out to the nature reserve nearby and had a bit of a picnic and a braai.
Is that why that RAV4 is so dirty?
That's why the RAV4 is so dirty.
Ah, okay.
I can actually really recommend Riet Vlei Nature Reserve.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's a free plug for them, even though I had to pay to get in.
Ah, okay. Well, it's a nature reserve. I suppose they're just covering costs. I don't think it's too expensive to get into that.
No, it isn't. For two adults, $118.
$118. Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's not too bad, as long as it's not like 250 Rand or something. For
No, it wasn't anything stupid.
Yeah. Two adults. That's what. What do they make? About 50 odd bucks a person.
59.
59 Rand a person.
Yeah. Not excessive at all.
Yeah. Lawrence?
I did the Mother Day thing on Sunday.
Okay.
Wife got breakfast in bed,
Cleaned
the house, made lunch, et cetera. And then drove a Golf R around.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw you at the office the other day with that Golf R.
Yeah. Nutty piece of kit there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Review to follow shortly.
Best feature?
You know what? The Golf R is like pizza. Even when it's bad, it's good. It doesn't matter whether it's cold. It doesn't matter whether it's got pineapple on it. It is good. It ticks all the boxes.
Yeah.
There's a reason why that car is as popular as it is.
Yeah.
It's just that good.
No, I mean, Golf has always made those cars solid. And, I mean, maybe a little bit overpriced for what they are, but that's just the demand and supply, I suppose.
Well, they have an image and they can afford to charge for it.
That's it. They've got it.
Simple as that.
Yeah, my weekend was quiet-ish. I started picking up this freaking cold, so hopefully I can kick it. I think it's because my daughter's now going to creche and she's bringing back all the
disease
vector, all the little bugs that lurk around there. There's this one little boy, I must tell you. It's one little boy. He's I don't know. He's probably just over a year old. His name is Bryce. And Bryce
sounds like trouble.
Bryce has a thing for my daughter at the age of one. Every time I walk in there, Bryce is either on top of her trying to wrestle her down or something, or trying to put something on her, or trying to pull something from her. So, you know, I wouldn't
Bryce
be surprised.
Needs a talking to.
Bryce needs to meet my shotgun.
It's a bit of my pain.
Let's get straight into it, and you know, we've got a good lineup this morning, and I suppose the first one to talk about is car sales in South Africa. So car sales in South Africa are a little bit depressed. We've seen particularly new car sales on the decline now, and the beginning of this year is no different. So you know, so we've seen an 8% decline in the first 3 months of this year, and you know, who knows what's going to happen. What do you guys think about the economic conditions in the automotive industry?
Look, I can only speak from personal experience. I mean, I was due to buy a car last year, so I'm still driving my car, which is now paid off. I cannot afford to buy another car, not because
is part of it you don't want to take the risk.
It is essentially I can't justify that new expense.
Yeah,
I have a car, it's paid off, it runs. Yeah. Put the key in, start it, and why go and buy another car now just for the sake of buying another car? Yes, I know in about 2 years I'm going to regret it, but I just cannot afford that monthly payment now.
Yeah. Well, I suppose you're representative of the consumer of motor vehicles in the country. Is
I'm running them all.
You're thinking twice. Yeah. Mm. You're thinking twice before you take the plunge, Martin.
Same story here. Same story here. Look, I had to buy a little car, and I really bought a little one.
And you drive with your head out the sunroof.
Almost. No, I can't put a sunroof on an Etios because then the whole thing will collapse.
How tall are you?
1.95.
1.95, yeah. Six so you're something. Really tall.
Yeah, well, look, I don't get into my Etios. I dress myself in it.
You dress yourself in it.
I put it on like a jacket. But the reason why I chose that car is because I know it will last a long time.
Yeah.
And I know it will be worth something when the time comes to sell it on.
Yeah.
And I know it won't cost me a fortune in maintenance. Again, it's all about minimizing the risk.
And cost, because I've got a kid going to high school next year. That's I'm really not looking forward to that expense.
So you know, vehicle car prices or new car prices, as well as used car prices, are something that should really stimulate the economy and stimulate car sales. But we've had a situation where both the inflation on the price of a new car as well as the inflation on the price of a used car has lagged inflation. You know, inflation just over 4%. And inflation on new cars are coming in at 1.8% and 2.3%. 1.8% being the rise of car prices from a used point of view, and 2.3% being the rise of car prices from a new point of view, whereas inflation's at 4%. And this is still not stimulating the sales of new and used vehicles.
Mm.
I mean, what we're seeing in the economy is a shift from new to used. The averaged used car versus new car sale is still over 2%. But is that an indication of a falling new car market?
It's an indication of less money going around in general. Everything else is more expensive.
People are just being a little bit more frugal with their expensive. Yeah. And they're sitting there going, you know what? There's nothing wrong with the car I have. We're not going to play keep up with the Joneses because we just can't afford it. Because we now have to decide between a new car or buying the kids' winter uniforms or buying groceries this month.
Yeah.
So consumers are being sensible. I think you're an exact example.
They have to be a little bit more frugal with their expenditure. And you know who I really feel for in this is the dealers. I really do. These guys have got tons of metal on their floor that they can't move because people just can't afford to buy vehicles.
Yeah.
You have things like buyback assistance and guaranteed
future value.
They are trying so many different things to kind of stimulate people to come in and buy vehicles. But if the consumer is sitting there going, you know what, not this year, maybe next year, if things get better, if the fuel price comes down, if we sort of stabilize the economy, et cetera, et cetera. I think the people who can afford to buy things are being a little bit more sensible with their purchasing.
I think affordable car sales would also get a bit of a boost if they were to implement the kind of lease agreements that you already have on the top class cars.
Almost moving to a pay-to-use sort
pay
of
to
model.
Use kind of model. Yeah.
I mean, you just have to look at something like the Renault Kwid. You know, we as motoring journalists, we all despise the Renault Kwid.
I speak for yourself.
But they move 3,000 units a month because it's a cheap, sensible car.
Yeah.
And they've said, well, we'll give you the first 6 months of interest, months of insurance, mahala.
Well, I mean, Land Rover's got a deal on the Discovery Sport at the moment, which you can't get those interest rates in the market in too many places.
Mm. They're trying to move metal.
They're trying to move metal. So, and that's on the new car side. So there's this definite subtle buoyancy in the used car market, but definitely not shooting the lights out. I mean, in my experience, the new and the used car market, or the car market in general, has never fallen off a cliff in my career in automotive, which spans over a decade and a half. It's never fallen off a cliff, and we've never shot the lights out. It's always been this steady state, either a subtle decline or a subtle incline in sales numbers. And, you know, what's holding up the sales numbers at the moment are exports because our economy is not in a good place.
But from the article that we're referencing here, the exports have actually gone up. The rest of the world is going, hey, that's a good place to make cars, and we can get them there cheap. So exports are going up, but local sales are depressed.
Yeah,
because people are just not...
A sign of the economy. So if exports go up, that's good for our economy, because the automotive industry contributes over 7%.
To the GDP
of South Africa.
More than mining and agricultural.
Exactly. So we need this. We need those exports. So don't diss the exports. They're here for a frickin' reason, you know.
No, the more manufacturers we get here opening up factories to make cars,
exactly,
the better off we're going to
exactly.
be.
Also, I think there's a bit of a time delay at play. Yeah?
What do you mean time delay?
This is referencing first quarter.
Not only that. No. What I mean is eventually the cars, like your own, that you're holding on to,
pent-up demand.
Yes. Eventually those cars will wear out and they will become uneconomical to run.
Yeah.
And that's where people will buy, new second-hand cars.
Well, I mean, everybody's like gets into this hole of, the economy's stuffed and we're going down the tube. And no, we're not. All that people like Martin are doing is they're holding off for a while, which then creates this bottleneck of demand, or what I call pent-up demand. Mm-hmm. And that demand gets released at some point.
At some point, it will.
Well, let's
released.
Just put it this way: I'm going to hold on to my Tucson for another year or so, and then when I find a nice secondhand Stelvio,
I like the way you're thinking,
dude. That's the one that I want, but I can't afford to buy a new one, so I have to wait until some secondhand ones come out on the market.
But pent up demand. There's so many South Africans in this exact scenario, and when that demand gets released. Then we're going to see car sales go up. So it's a good thing that the inflation rate on the price of used and new cars are not above inflation, because at some point that's going to assist in the release of this pent-up demand. But moving swiftly along to Tesla's being sued over the autopilot death. Now,
again,
cry me a freaking river, because Tesla says that they didn't detect the driver's hands on the wheel pre the crash. Now, we're going to have to follow this story quite closely. And the autopilot was apparently engaged for 32 minutes pre the crash, including...
He was reading the newspaper and drinking a cup of coffee.
Well, you know, we don't know. And does it mean that these self-driving cars should have cameras in them facing the driver to see whether the driver, what the driver's actually doing?
He was asleep. You know... We have got cars that have similar tech to this floating around in South Africa. Martin, you've driven one. I've driven one.
Yeah.
Being able to say that I've driven from Johannesburg to Pretoria without touching the controls on the car, I'm not lying.
There including the steering
wheel. There are cars that are capable of doing that.
Yeah. Volvo XC90 is one,
that
right?
That with a Mercedes E-Class.
Yeah.
The onus is still on the person that is operating the vehicle to be in control of that machine at all times. Even if you are... The car is got autopilot and all the bells and whistles and everything. You should still be fully aware of what the car is doing, because it's still a machine.
Also, I think Tesla was a bit optimistic, possibly, to call this autopilot, because this immediately tells the people this car can drive itself.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, back at Rons, they still need an attentive driver behind the wheel. They should have called it something like pilot assist. I think that's Volvo's name.
Yeah.
BMW.
Assisted drive
or something of that sort.
I think you got a point, but Tesla's rules are clear. I mean, you have to stay in control of the car, like Lawrence says. So the name aside, I mean, I think you got a point with the name autopilot, but I think that's more of a future move than a current move. I mean, they're branding this piece of technology and software so that in the future, self-driving cars called autopilot mean autopilot, so they don't have to change the name. But I don't think that's the reason you can say the car's the problem.
I don't think the car's the problem.
No, and it is.
I mean,
once
BMW.
Again, where is the story coming from?
America.
I hate to pick on them, but it's the Yanks.
Their suing is second nature.
Well, speaking from recent experience with the new BMW X5, if you take your hands off the wheel for more than 5 seconds, the car alerts you, and the head-up display and little flashing lights on the steering wheel. And it tells you, put your hands on the steering wheel. And if you don't, the whole thing disengages and it actually looks for a spot to pull over and park.
Yeah. Well, I mean, over the weekend in my car, one of my friends, we were going from his house to the airfield that I hang her in. And, you know, most cars today, you don't put the seatbelt in, it screams at you and it doesn't stop. Bing, 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 bing. So I said to him, hey, trying to put your seatbelt on. So what he said to me was that in Zambia, the guys buy extra seatbelt clips and they just stick the seat. So, you know, human behavior is the problem here.
You can buy that on Wish.
Yes.
Yeah. Or you can go to a scrapyard.
Yeah.
And just get one. And I know of many people who do exactly that.
It's stupid.
It's stupid.
Yeah.
It's stupid. Let's move on before the rant continues. So, car brands getting into other brand extensions. So, Bugatti has put their brand on this thing called a hookah pipe.
See how much it costs?
Yes. Good thing is, I don't know. Why would you buy something? First of all, why would I want to buy a hookah pipe? I mean, I don't smoke, but good for them. But 1.5 million rand?
Uh-huh.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
For a pipe. Is this a vape?
Yeah, it's kind almost like a vape.
You know,
a carbon fiber casing, titanium chassis, and hand-sewn fine leather detailing.
Yeah, you know, a few years ago, Top Gear actually did a piece on this.
Yeah.
And it was what the takeaway from the inset was, people will buy anything if it's got a badge on it.
Well, I mean, especially if they trust that badge.
I don't know if you've been to a high-end dealership at any time. They actually have a little section in the dealership
with glass cases.
Yeah, with all their
with
stuff.
With their merchandise.
Yeah. Mm.
And this is basically just that. It's just for people who have more money. And to quote Nicolas Cage from Gone in 60 Seconds, self-indulgent wieners.
Self-indulgent wieners.
Yes. Just people who got too much bloody money.
We need sound effects.
Yes.
So another interesting one was a Lamborghini speaker. Now, yeah. I mean, I think that speaker looks pretty cool.
Who was it that made the coffee machine that cost like 1.5 million?
Coffee machine?
That looked like a V8. I think it was Ferrari.
Wow.
They made a coffee machine that looked like a V12 engine block, and the coffee came out of the exhaust pipes.
I'm down with that. Well, not that
but
that
it was
price.
Stupidly priced.
Yeah.
This is another one of those things.
Well, I mean, I think another one that makes a little bit of sense because it has an engine in it is a Lexus Sport Yacht. Because, you know, it's not too far removed. Although the Lamborghini speaker could be the speakers inside the Lamborghini.
Well, listen, you could have your Lamborghini speaker on your Lexus yacht while smoking your hookah pipe from
Bugatti. Oh, my word. As long as you're not sitting on an Audi R18
I'm looking
ultra
at the picture
check.
Of this Lexus yacht. It is a thing of rare beauty.
It's
beautiful.
It's beautiful. I think it was...
Also, no sign of a spindle grill.
FCA Fiat Chrysler, the Fiat 500 had a limited edition run. I think it was 500 of the Fiat 500 that was also based off some yacht that they built for some guy that lives in Monaco.
Nutty. So then we get to the Audi R18 Ultra Chair. Now this doesn't look like a racing seat.
No, would you
it
put that?
It barely looks like a chair.
Would you put that behind the desk in your office? No, I don't think so. That looks like it belongs in an art museum.
Yeah, supported by aluminium legs. It weighs only 2.2 kilograms.
It looks like a torture device from medieval times. Sit on that.
Yep.
Tell us what you know. And if you don't, they could stab him with the legs because that's what it looks like.
Just force him to sit on it.
Maybe this would have been better if it looked like a car seat, but it looks like an office chair. But, I mean, I suppose all to
well, but it's carbon fiber.
My office chair is a racing seat.
Yeah.
And it has wheels. And it goes around in a full circle. I don't want to sit on that.
Yeah. It's ultra light. Why not?
Well, I wouldn't want to try and pick up my office
chair. You see, there will always be people with more money than taste
sense.
Or sense.
Thank you. That explains
it's
it.
It's true. It's true. And you know what? People are brand loyal. So having a Lamborghini speaker or a Booker pipe is a statement.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I think at the end of the day, this is also it has connotations to art.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm going to have something that nobody else has. And maybe only five people
or
in the world
self-expression.
Have. Yeah.
You know, self-expression, which nothing wrong with that. I mean, if somebody has 150 million rand to spend on a Booker pipe, why not?
Well, listen, I'll sit there and I'll go, you know what? I would spend a sizable chunk of money on a Valentino Rossi helmet.
Yeah.
That was signed by the man and put it in a glass case.
I'll buy a Mitsubishi Evo Timo Mac in an edition. My ambitions are far
find
more humble.
Find an oil trade for me, Martin. With a Land Rover stamp.
No, then it'll leak oil.
Then how to keep your car safe from thieves. So, you know, we spoke last time about the Ford Fiesta and the Fiasco, yes, and the break-ins that that have been occurring. And, you know, I was thinking, does it, because of all the technology in cars today and all of the safety features and all of the tech, are the car manufacturers, and this is not only Ford, are the car manufacturers by and large making locks that aren't as bulletproof as they were before? Because if I think about my car, my last two cars, as a matter of fact, I never, ever stuck the key in that keyhole. Mm-hmm. So why create a kick-ass lock when it's not going to be used?
The thing that strikes me as very odd here is in the 90s, Ford in Europe had a big problem with their XR3s and XR2s being stolen by joyriders.
You could start the thing with
joyriders.
Believe it or not.
And just leave it somewhere.
Yeah, so they take the car and go do burnouts and handbrake turns and maybe even crash it and then just leave it there. And in response, they cooperated with Chubb.
I
to develop new
stupid-looking
yes,
key.
The stupid like cylindrical key, yeah. Which was apparently pick-proof. Now, at the same time, back then they reinforced the lock mechanism so you can't reach it from the outside as easily.
Okay,
why did they stop doing that?
Well, because it's probably expensive. So why? So my point is, if I was a business owner, a car manufacturer, or you know, or leading a business like that, who they have a profit motive, and something that's not a feature that's not being used on the car, why continue to have that cost being higher than it needs to be?
I think at the end of the day, with most cars being almost fully electric. I mean, most luxury cars have got two batteries now.
Yeah.
One to run the engine, one to run all the electronics.
You don't need a hole in the side of the door.
The problem is, if the battery goes flat, how do you access the vehicle?
You need a back door.
Even some of the car keys that you get nowadays, it's a solid fob.
Yeah.
If you find the little release button, you can clip it off, release the side of the key, and there is an actual
key.
Physical key that you can remove a piece of the door panel and stick it in, and there's you can an still example. Access the car.
Yeah, mine. Oh, that's not
like you. The Golf R that I'm driving now has got a laser cut key.
Yeah, exactly.
Which you don't actually use it because there's no actual ignition in the car. It's a push button start. You need it to access the car, and I think that is just a handover from previous gen.
Yeah.
When the guys will eventually say, you know what, if the car battery goes dead, you're going to need, there'll be a positive terminal there that you're going to need to put a battery pack on if you want to get into the car.
Yeah, yeah.
There will be no more locks.
No, we have to move away from this analog system unlocking a car. Mm. And you know, I feel for Ford because, you know, I don't know what's in that lock mechanism and whether my theory is true. You know, I have no basis for saying that that the lock, you know, the cost of the lock has come down. But if I was a car manufacturer, that's exactly what I would do. I would bring the cost of the things that aren't being used down and eventually eliminate it because it's analog.
Case in point, even my little Toyota has no door lock on the passenger side.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you use the key to open the boot, and then you can use the key to open the driver's door.
Maybe
but everything else is sealed
off. Maybe
that's
the answer. You know, you need access to the car in an emergency when the battery goes flat. So maybe door locks aren't the answer. Maybe only have a boot lock, and maybe have it under a flap that, I don't know, I'm not a car manufacturer.
Well, some manufacturers, I'm not going to mention the specific German manufacturer, actually overshot when one of their top-line cars in the early 2000s went fully electronic, and they eliminated the door locks completely.
Oh, wow.
And then they figured out after like 6 months after the first customer cars started coming in with defective batteries that they can't actually access this car because the bonnet and the boot and everything was electronically locked. So they had to devise and retrofit as part of a recall a backdoor entry into the boot so you can put power on the battery to access the rest of the car so you can get to the rest of the...
Maybe the answer is some sort of system that can open the bonnet of the car. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, but locks are analog.
Fingerprint access.
Yes, fingerprint access.
Yep.
Locks are analog, but then you still need the battery.
Need the battery.
But
that's
maybe fingerprint access with a redundant battery that...
there's ways and means. And
But then we're getting back to cost again.
Exactly.
Runner, swings and roundabouts. There is an answer.
The other
problem
is remote jamming.
Yes, so that is another problem that's happening in South Africa is remote jamming. Now, how this remote jamming works is, to my knowledge, they capture your signal of your remote as you push the button.
As you push the button.
And then what they do is they scramble that signal so it doesn't get to the car, so you can't lock it.
Well, that's the one way of doing it. The other way is they intercept that signal and then they decode it and then they feed it to the car as the car's own key.
Yes. Yes. So what I've been doing is I don't use my remote on my car. Mm-hmm. I've got the button on the door.
Yeah.
And when I've closed the door, I just hit that button and my doors lock rather than using the remote because of the remote jamming.
The thing here is if you have that, stand by your car, push the button, watch the doors lock, watch the mirrors retract, then walk away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you're then not the second scenario that Martin just described doesn't help you.
Keep an eye on your car as you're walking away. Don't walk away from it like a superhero with an explosion going off behind you.
This is actually a real cause for concern. Yeah. As more cars such as yours or this RAV4 I'm driving or the Golf R you're driving, as these things get more and more and more automated and convenience focused, it opens up extra avenues for the criminals to get in.
Nothing's any different, right? And then they put up a sign saying,
remote jamming is a real problem. Ensure that your car is locked. How? Because as soon as you touch the handle, the thing unlocks in any case.
Anyway, yeah, that's so true. That's so true. Yeah, so moving swiftly along, how do you be responsible in driving so that you don't get yourself into trouble? I mean, let's go to the first obvious thing.
Speed.
Besides speed, texting and driving.
Pay attention to your car and to the surroundings. Yes. And to the other cars and to the road surface.
Put your cell phone in your pocket. Almost all new cars, even some of the second-hand cars that are 5-6 years old, have got telephony. You've got Bluetooth. Everything that you need is on the screen in the car. Yeah. Why do you still want to push buttons on your phone when you can push a button on the steering wheel and just talk to Siri?
Exactly. So that's a good point. Don't text and drive. Use the car's technology. I don't know if a lot of people really use their car's technology to its full intent.
I saw it this morning. A lady in a C-Class Merc, a new one, with a phone stuck to her head. Yeah. What are you doing?
You don't need to because you can talk to Mercedes.
Yeah. What are you doing? Why is the phone stuck to
her?
The
Ford Ranger. Which I saw this morning. Yeah. And I know for a fact that this Ranger Wild Track, it's a new one,
has
Sync 3, which is actually a
CarPlay and Android Auto.
And it's a really easy system to use.
And the voice recognition in these cars are very good if you don't use Siri. I mean, Siri's an option. The voice recognition is pretty good. You don't need to use the phone to
put it in your bag, in the boot. Yeah. If you don't trust yourself, but stop using your phone while you're driving.
So let's pay attention to the road, and to the other road users.
The next one is stick to the speed limit. So for me, this whole thing that speed kills. Speed doesn't kill. The sudden stop kills. The differential in speed kills. So that's why the speed limit exists, is so that we're all moving at the same speed. So. You know, driving 60 k's an hour on a highway is as bad.
It's actually more dangerous
as driving 140.
Yeah.
So for me, you know, people say, "Well, I can drive. Speed's not a problem." Yeah, speed's not a problem, but the difference in your speed and someone else's speed is where the problem lies.
And it's the person that is doing the speed, if they do not have depth perception and they cannot judge what everybody else around them is doing.
Or car control skills.
Yeah.
Thank you. There is a reason why you are allowed to do 280 on the Autobahn in Germany.
Because everybody else is.
Because you cannot get onto the Autobahn in Germany if you have not completed an advanced driving course.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, besides that, the principle is true. Everyone else is doing the same speed in the same lane.
Yeah.
And that's the reason.
So don't be that guy and do 90 in the fast lane and say, "I am keeping everybody safe.
I'm paying my license. I can ride in the fast lane." The next one is exactly. You tell them, Lawrence. You tell them.
You go, boy.
I get very angry with those people who think that they are.
He's talking about a gear knob. What are you talking about? You're being a gear knob. Perform regular vehicle maintenance. Now, this one irritates me because this is so easy to do. And we're not talking about servicing the car. You know, the worst thing you can have is deflated tires because the tire gets hot. People don't realize that at the bend of that tire is where the heat starts to occur. And that's where the blowout happens.
This sort of goes back to what we were talking about earlier. So you're gonna keep your car for a little bit longer than what you would normally after the 2 or 5 years or whatever. Keep the thing well maintained. In other words, it's when you stop at the garage and you say, put in $500, and the guy says to you, oil and water. Don't just go, yeah, it's okay. Pop the bonnet. Check it out. You will be surprised.
Don't ever check the cooler when the engine is hot.
Yes, don't do that.
Ever do that when it's hot.
But most cars nowadays have a non-pressurized reservoir.
Yeah, but that only tells you so much. True. Unfortunately.
It's also keep the car well maintained. So change your windshield wipers every year. They don't last forever. One season, and they cost $50 for a set.
Yeah.
I mean, we have enough tutorials on our site showing you exactly how to change your windshield wipers on whatever car, whatever model.
Yeah.
And most cars, it's exactly the same.
Exactly.
Lift it up, unclip it, clip a new one in. Just it takes you 5 minutes.
Lighting. Make sure that your car is visible.
Yeah.
Your lights aren't there just
your tail
for
lights,
you
your headlights.
To say.
It's like every now and again, just switch everything on, all the lights, and just take a walk around.
Working.
Yeah, just make sure it's working.
It's vehicle maintenance.
Buy a little tire pressure gauge. They're like $80 from a reputable.
You know what? I learned that lesson a couple of years ago.
Don't rely on the service stations.
Yes, because their service station pumps or the air pumps are not calibrated.
Nope, they're not calibrated.
They get chucked around like
And then I think the general principle is rather slightly overinflated than underinflated, right?
If you overinflate by like 20 or 30 kPa, the chances are that you might actually score maybe 1 or 2% on fuel consumption as well.
Yes. So rather slightly overinflated. So if the car's standard is 2.2 bar and you don't trust the pump,
go to 2.3.
Yes. It's not going to hurt.
And here's a pro tip. If you have very low profile tires and you overinflate them slightly, you reduce the chance of damage to the tire and to the rim when you hit a pothole.
Ah, okay. Because there's more pressure there, there's less likelihood of that tire hitting the rim when it goes through the pothole.
The takeaway is, take care of your car.
Exactly.
Don't drive like an idiot, and you'll save yourself
Lawrence
and
is
possibly
I like it.
Somebody else's life.
Yes. Let's get on to something that everybody is being affected by, and that is the petrol price increase.
Again.
So the first 45 cents per litre increase happened on the 2nd of May, and a steep 95 cents per litre is looming at the end of this month or beginning of June.
How much?
95 cents per litre.
So I need a motorbike.
You need a motorbike. You just sell the Land Rover.
I can't do that because nobody wants it anymore.
Not because there's anything wrong with Land Rover, but because
it's actually very interesting when you look at this article.
Because we've been standing so long, yeah.
When you see what we pay
versus the other countries,
in the world, and you realize we actually have very cheap fuel. The problem is, and I think we've said this before many times, it is not the price of our petrol; it's how much money we earn.
That's where the trouble lies. So just to go through that list.
Disposable income is non-existent.
Iceland is almost double our petrol price.
26 rand a litre.
But I think the whole of Iceland is as big as Gauteng.
Yeah, well, so what? China?
Yeah, fair enough.
Is
28 rand.
Is 28 rand a litre. Norway? What is... that's around about 25 rand. Norway? 25 rand a litre. Monaco? That's early 20 rands a litre. Netherlands, a little bit cheaper at probably closer to 20 rand. And we only start getting into South African territory. Well, we don't, because Portugal is $1.82.
See, there's only one problem there. All of those countries actually have well-developed public transport systems.
That's very true, but
in
I think
South
Martin,
Africa, we are very dependent on our own cars and on using taxis and buses.
Well, the biggest problem here, we've spoken about this many times, is the fuel levy.
Yeah.
The fuel levy is what the government needs to
keep afloat.
Yes, but no, they need to bring it back because the fuel levy if they brought that fuel levy back, I'm almost positive they'd bring in more tax, because people will be more incentivized to drive. You know, which means that they'll get the volume, which means the economy will be slightly stimulated.
And your groceries will cost less.
True, because the transport costs will come.
And the taxi fare from the township into town to go look for work will cost less as well.
You know, at the end of the day, it really is. It's we devote a very, very large portion of our salaries to rent and fuel, if not all.
Rent and transport.
Yeah. Those are the two biggest consumers. And when you look at when I was in China, I was trying to do the calculations in my head, because the Rand one exchange rate is actually very close. I think it's like 1 to 2.
Yeah, yeah.
And you go there and you buy a McDonald's Big Mac meal and it costs 47 won. Times that by 2, that's 97 Rand for a Big Mac meal.
Yeah.
So on the Big Mac index
or something.
Costs twice as much there. Their fuel costs twice as much. But you know what? They're earning enough money to be able to say that it's almost exactly the same as it is back here.
And they probably have well-sorted public health care and all sorts of other things as well.
Yeah, I reckon so, yeah. But
that's a good comparison. Compare things to a Big Mac meal. Because McDonald's is everywhere in the world, and maybe we should do that exercise.
They actually have done it. It's called the Big Mac Index. It should cost the same everywhere in the world, no matter where. It should be more or less the same
ratio, because the Big Mac meal, I suppose, is representative of the other part of the cost of living, is eating.
Yeah,
and then you know, maybe there's a housing index to the fuel price as well, because those are the three things that make life go on: is roof over your head, food in your stomach, and the ability to get places. Let's go away.
But just because it's worse elsewhere, does it make it better here?
No, I mean, it's not necessarily worse. I think Lawrence's argument about the relative price of the index is
disposable
a good one,
income, you know, comes into play.
So let's move away from that depressing topic and move on to one that, you know, the shareholders of this business may be crying, but I think it's a good thing. BMW has just taken a hit in profit. Why?
The i-Series?
Because they're trying to invest in electric cars.
Which is not a bad thing.
It's not a bad
thing.
They're
one of the few companies in the world that is actually doing it and saying, you know what, we acknowledge the fact that this is the future of motoring.
Yeah.
You guys acknowledge the fact this is the future of motoring. Somebody has to fork out for the infrastructure.
Let's invest in the short term.
It ain't going to be the government.
Exactly.
So you know what? We'll put in the charging stations. We'll put in the solar garages. We'll do this. We'll take that hit in the hopes that when it comes time, when you finally realize that you need an electric car in your life, you'll be looking at an i-Series.
Exactly. Exactly. So they've boosted their expenditure by over one third. And they jump started it. They're also investing in the iX3, which should be seen in around 2020. So good on you, BMW. I think that's a good thing. Reinvest the profits of the business into the future of the company,
and it will pay off in the future.
Well, definitely. I'll be able to tell you more about BMW's strategy regarding electric vehicles next time we're here, because I'll actually be attending a BMW presentation. Lovely. A business session on this topic tomorrow.
Lovely, yeah. Lovely.
i3 and i3s.
Yeah,
the new ones.
The new ones.
So we look forward to hearing about that launch from you, Martin. So next thing is Tata denies it's selling Jaguar Land Rover to Peugeot. So now,
in other words, expect JLR to be part of PSA in about 6 months.
Where I thought this was interesting is Tata came out and vehemently denied it, but Peugeot jumped on the bandwagon and said, we're always open to opportunities. So who knows what's going to happen in this area?
There's definitely fire because of the smoke. JLR posted massive losses. And a company like Tata, who's already like Subaru Heavy Industries, they make trains and military vehicles. For them, this is a cost center that's just, it's a black hole. Who's to say that they won't just say, hey, PSA, come,
Well, I mean, let me put it this way. Maybe there's nothing on the table at the moment, as Tata kind of denies. Okay, and just because of this particular rumor, okay, Peugeot's publicly said, well, we're open to opportunities. Now maybe a deal will be struck, and you can't then go back and blame Tata for saying, oh, you lied, because they didn't. Maybe the deal only came about as a result of Tata saying, oh, okay, I didn't know you were in the market, Peugeot.
Possibly.
Yeah, it's going to change hands again.
I don't really understand Tata's strategy with JLR, though, to be very honest.
It's probably luxury, because we've spoken about this before.
But there's no technology spillover into their lower line cars.
About two, three years ago, the Tata Bolt that came out, that actually had some of the stuff from low-level Jaguars in it.
Like,
it had it, I think, the infotainment system and...
That's all off-the-shelf items in any case.
But it was still trickled down. The problem is the trickle stopped.
Yeah.
And...
Because if you look at what Geely and Volvo are doing, for instance, the new Volvo XC40 is... designed for that, their new small car platform is designed to be used in a series of GD cars for the export market.
And
as
I saw one overseas. There is actually a picture on my Instagram that I took in a parking lot.
Right.
And it looks like an XC40, a cheaply made XC40, but
probably.
I mean, the technology is spilling over, right?
But that's how you spread the cost of these developments and things. And Jaguar Land Rover has spent massive amounts of money, and Tata's not getting any kind of benefit from this.
Well, you don't know that, right?
But meanwhile, back at the Ronce, JLR banked heavily on the Chinese market, which is now showing signs of strain and collapse, or slowing down at least.
Well, Haval's taking over.
Well, yeah, that too.
Watch Haval.
I'll be honest with you. There is... in China... it is very, very similar to here. You have the super rich, the super poor, and a pretty large middle class. And the middle class is the ones that are buying all the vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is that
divide.
Market is flooded. There, everybody said, oh, this is the new place. And then everybody piled in there, and it's just offering every single car under the sun. And the guys are going, well,
we will pick and choose, thank you, which means prices come down, profits come down.
Exactly.
But that's fine. That's called economy. Yeah. So it will sort itself out. Mm. So before we get on to our very exciting discussion around Martin's car review of the Audi Q8, let's talk about motoring or motorsport news. Yesterday, Lewis Hamilton beat his number two. Don't know if he's the number two anymore, Valtteri Bottas, to the line and to the first corner on the start, as a matter of fact. So Valtteri Bottas went onto the grid in pole position, and on the first corner, Lewis Hamilton managed to pip him to the post.
He squeaked around him,
and Verstappen was third on the grid, lost a bit of traction on the start, and Ferrari came alongside Lewis Hamilton, actually alongside Bottas, and Hamilton and the Ferrari squeezed Bottas. I thought there was going to be a crash there on that corner, but because Ferrari was so quick off the start, I think they outbraked themselves and
flat spotted the front tire,
and and then ended up with Vettel being fifth because Leclerc passed him. And eventually they had to do a bit of a switcheroo because Leclerc was behind him, and they had to do a switcheroo because of the flat spot. Leclerc was lapping faster than Vettel. And when they did the switcheroo,
and the woes at Ferrari continue.
But what was interesting for me is that the two engineers were having an argument which lasted five laps. Okay. Now, this didn't only happen once in the race. It happened a second time when then Vettel got a new set of boots and was behind Leclerc, lapping faster than him. And the two engineers are having an argument again about strategy. It lasted another four or five laps.
Meanwhile, back at the Ronce, the two Ferraris are fighting with each other.
Yes, instead of racing.
For fourth position. And Verstappen's just walking away because of this infighting between the two Ferraris.
And the Mercedes-Benzes were... gone. Yep.
Gone with the wind.
Yep.
Exactly. And once again, I think this is actually some sort of new record that they've Mercedes-Benz. 1-2 finishes. It's some sort of.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's. I mean, I know that Hamilton is now past Senna in terms of pole positions and leading laps and wins, but he led from start to finish. And so I hope this is not going to become a procession, to be honest, because it's going to make Formula One boring.
Look, I think after Monaco, we'll know, because Monaco really is, it is a procession. Whoever gets on pole wins, yeah. Unless they crash out.
Yeah.
I think going into the holiday break, in I think it's a month or so, whoever's sort of at that point is far ahead in the constructors is probably going to take it if they don't, the wheels completely fall off the bus. But I think Ferrari has shown that infighting, terrible strategy, there's nothing wrong with the cars. They just, their team dynamic has gone for a ball.
And, yeah.
Until they fix that
problem.
They
need leadership in that team. I mean, they've clearly got the wherewithal.
Yeah.
They just need to flipping up their strategy game and their communication game. So you're right. It is a historical thing in that it's a 5-1-2 in a row.
Jeez.
So
that just goes to show you that either Mercedes-Benz is really lucky or they have got all their ducks in a row and they are just outperforming everybody else in terms of team, vehicle, mechanics, engineering, the works.
It's a combination. And Ferrari's once again, I think, throwing it away. They're absolutely throwing it away with you know, they need to win the race, not fight between Leclerc and Vettel.
You know, I think it's still pretty early in the season.
Yeah.
We're 5 races in, we've got another 15 to go, 12 or 13 to go. At what point in the season do they say, eh, it's not worth fighting for anymore. Let's just do this as a development year and we'll take it to them next year.
No, you've got to fight to the end, in my opinion.
Yep. Well, I agree.
So anyway, more motorsport news. We were lucky enough to have Tasman Pepper at South African Auto Trader Car of the Year, and she raced in the all-female W Series last weekend, and managed to move from 16th place to 8th and finished off in the points. So proudly South African Tasman Pepper is making waves when it comes to the W Series. Now the W Series is set up to be an all woman Formula 3 race and hopefully take this stage as the feeder to Formula 1 for females.
I personally would love to see a woman in a Formula 1 seat. I really would.
Well, they have been in the past, just probably not enough. Just probably not enough.
And that's where the series comes from. And yeah, we're all rooting for Tasman. I really hope that she does incredibly well. The season is still long. So let's fly the flag high.
Yeah, let's see where she can get to. But you know who's behind? Well, one of the figureheads that's behind all of this? David Coulthard. And he's a key player behind the scenes. Yes, the chin. The jaw. Old David Coulthard. So let's watch this one closely. But without further ado, onto Martin's Audi Q8.
Da-da-da-da. See, so here's the thing. Audi, and I actually asked them this question at the media presentation, because they, before they tell us about the car, they outline their future product plans. And the one car that absolutely shone in its absence was the Audi A8.
And
A8. Uh-huh. I said, so
the sedan.
What's the story? What's your plan here? Why no A8? Because it was launched at the end of last year.
Yeah.
Or even before that, internationally it was shown, and there's no sign of this. And they said the A8 was always a low volume car for them. Because in that market segment they'd never really managed to gain traction. So now they're taking a different tack. Seeing as people aren't buying as many sedans anymore, they decided to give it their best possible shot with a top-level SUV.
Ah.
Because people buy SUVs. Sales success, the guy actually said, sales success comes with a blocky profile and all-wheel drive.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what they did with this Q8. So in an alternate universe, the Q8 would be what the A8 would have become if it developed in a different direction.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. The world is moving more and more towards SUVs.
Yes.
So we've got these two segments developing, mm-hmm. and the sedan is the loser.
Yeah.
The one segment is if people want to be in higher, bigger cars for whatever reason, multi-purpose, you know, vehicles. And then the other segment is sports cars.
Yep.
So, you know, people want to drive, you know, Porsche 911s, Lamborghinis, Ferraris, those sorts of exotic type cars. So it's not surprising that Audi's made this move.
I think it's actually a brilliant move because this car, this Q8, actually incorporates all of the things that made the A8 a lovely thing through the years, right down to the beautifully trimmed interior and lot of high tech and aluminium space frame construction and. But they packaged it in a way that will appeal to today's buyers.
You know what it looks like to me?
I'm afraid to ask.
The Porsche Macan.
No, I wouldn't say so. I wouldn't really say so. You know what it looks like to me? In 2013, Audi showed a concept at the Frankfurt Auto Show, the Audi Sport Quattro concept.
Yeah.
Which was basically a chopped-down A5 coupe.
Yeah.
That rear pillar, that rear roof pillar, and the way it blends into the tailgate is pretty much copied exactly on this Q8.
Oh.
You can go Google it quickly if you want. But in the meantime, let's talk about the tech. Now, in olden days, a light was either on or off.
Uh-huh.
Audi now has literally, it's probably thousands of LEDs spread all around this thing. And it gives you the cutest little animations on the headlights when you unlock the car and on the taillights when you unlock it. And when you lock it, the lights run in little sequences that actually kind of describes a little pattern.
Oh, wow.
It is utterly useless. It means absolutely nothing, but it shows you that they paid attention to the presentation as well. And the same now applies inside. It's trimmed like an Audi, which means...
Yeah.
Every switch needs 4 newton to operate, and I'm sure they have a whole platoon of German engineers making sure that all the switch gear feels exactly the way they have to.
But you know what's cool about LEDs?
Uh-huh. Low power consumption.
Besides the low power consumption,
they last longer.
The ability to change the color inside the car. Now, has this Q8 got that ability? Because we know the A-Class does.
Yeah.
The winner of the Auto Trader South African
cars. You can select pretty much from an infinite palette.
Yes.
Blue, orange, red, pink, purple.
And you can personalize the inside of the car.
To change the inside look of the car. It is pretty spectacular.
I'm just showing. I'm showing Martin the Macan, and you know there is an uncanny resemblance.
Well, you know, it's an SUV.
Yes, I mean, all SUVs. You're trying to tell me all the SUVs look the same?
Pretty much. They all have the same basic form factor.
Yeah. So what interesting technology has this Q8 got in it?
Right, so forget about climate control buttons. Everything runs through the third screen, which means the second touch screen, which, by the way, features haptic feedback.
Oh, wow.
So you touch, let's say you want to adjust the air conditioning, and you touch the fan speed icon on this touch screen. The screen itself vibrates under your finger. Just a little... Just to let you know that the car actually acknowledges your input here.
Seems a bit pointless.
Yeah, I like the lights as well. It looks very cool and it does things.
You can't tell me that, you know, the one thing about technology is it's best served, or should I say its best use is when it disappears.
Yeah, that's true.
When you use it, but you don't
realize that it's there.
Realize it's there. That's the best kind of technology. Yeah. And if I think about, not just because I'm an Apple fan, but if I think about this phone and how they've made technology disappear.
Yeah.
It literally, you use this phone, you get the haptic features, you know what they mean, but you don't think about it.
No, exactly. And that's pretty much exactly what you get in this Audi as well. Obviously, the big middle screen, you can configure it like you can with a smartphone. You can drag and drop icons left, right, and center and do all of those things. But Their big selling point here is that they eliminated as many buttons and knobs as possible.
Brilliant.
Because they packed so many features into this car that they said at the presentation it would have ended up with something like 270 different buttons spread all around the interior.
But isn't, you know, this is the way of the future, but the ability for you to use a flat screen and use software to create the buttons means that you can upgrade the inside of the car over time. You don't have this physical button to worry about.
Yep.
I hate physical buttons.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't. In some instances, I don't.
Why? You got haptic. You can make it feel like a real button.
Yeah, but sometimes you don't want to look down to see what you're going, what you'll be adjusting.
That's a good point, but then you should limit those physical buttons to the steering controls.
Yeah.
So that you can feel the,
so
you know,
fortunately,
almost like freaking Braille.
Fortunately, Audi didn't bother with a gimmick like gesture control.
Oh, no, that won't work for a while.
But they have incorporated an adaptive advanced voice control system, which apparently learns your accent. Now, I just want to know how long is it going to take this car to figure out what the, let's say,
what the different accents sound
what
like.
What the lonial boots, how it's going to differentiate.
Turn on my headlights.
Between the lonial boot and the Boxberg boot.
Well, go and drive.
How long before it learns a swear word?
Go and drive. Oh, well, you know what? I've got Alexa in my home, and I can swear at her all I like. She ignores you. So you can't swear. It's Anyway, moving swiftly along, the Audi Q8. Thanks, Martin.
Yeah, the article is on there, and there's a little video link demonstrating what these headlights and taillights do.
Lovely.
Go
Don't
look
watch
at it.
The video.
Go look at that. Go watch that video.
Yeah.
You'll figure out what I mean. And then you see it only costs at a base price about $1.388 million.
Normal SUV price.
Normal
so
SUV
go
price.
Onto autotrader.co.za /car news/Audi or just go from the homepage and you'll go and find that video that that Martin's talking about.
Yep.
Well, onto some technology or search news. Who do you think the most searched for cars are in South Africa very quickly before we end
VW
the
Polo.
Show? Well, did you read the brief?
No.
Well, you're absolutely right. In the first quarter of this year, VW Polo stands on top of the most searched for vehicles on Autotrader.
Hilux, Ranger,
C-Class. Okay, well, we've caught Lawrence out. Number two, he got right. Number three was the Mercedes-Benz C-Class.
Okay, well, in the top 10, let's put it that way.
Nah, don't come and change your story now.
You know, this actually tells us more about the market than we might imagine.
Yeah,
because
of the
people
Polo.
Are buying down
from
the executive cars.
Exactly. And then the VW Golf is in number fourth place.
Mm-hmm.
And BMW 3 Series, who used to top the charts a couple of years ago, is right the way down in fifth place within your Ford Ranger.
Okay.
And then the BMW 1 Series, the Audi A3, and here's a surprising one. The Toyota Fortuner used to be a hugely popular car in the past and no longer is as popular.
As a searched car. It's still popular on the sales charts.
Well, yes, it's still popular on the sales charts because we've got some loyalty there, but isn't current search an indicator of future demand?
My biggest surprise is the BMW X5 in number 10.
Yeah,
that made it on the list.
That made it to the list at number 10.
Some politicians looking for their new car.
Well, they should rather go look at the Audi Q8. There we go.
Well, gentlemen, we are squarely out of time. So thank you for joining. And that was an exciting show. And see you all in 2 weeks' time.
This is CliffCentral.com.